Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with the executive editor of Newsbusters, your host, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome. Gather round. Feel free to sit Indian style if that's your thing. Oh, wait. Are we supposed to say sit indigenous style? Never mind. I can never keep up. Our main topic today is going to be MSNBC host Joy Reid. Does anyone miss Chris Matthews at this point?
The feeling most people get when they hear a Barack Obama speech, I felt this thrill going up my leg. I don't have that too often.
Steady.
No, seriously, it's a dramatic event.
Curtis Houck will be here to get into the latest hot talk on the readout. Do not miss the latest study on Newsbusters from Richard E. Noyes on how the evening news in the first half of May spent almost 33 minutes obsessing over the ouster of Liz Cheney, and just over 5 minutes on emerging problems under Biden, like inflation and the latest employment numbers, and how big federal payment keep people out of the labor force, and the border crisis. These are things they're just not interested in talking about. So Biden is actually the president of the United States, and the Democrats are in power. They are the majority in Congress. But the news media is still obsessing over the sorry state of the Republican Party. Gee, does that sound a little bit partisan? My latest column spins a bit out of the last podcast, but I was just amazed Sunday night on CNN. I discovered we had seen all the promos. Fareed Zakaria had an hour-long special on the radical rebellion about the Republicans at 8 o'clock, denouncing the Trump-incited Capitol riot.
Good evening. I'm Fareed Zakaria. America may never have lived through a political era as troubling as this one. A sitting president, Donald Trump, tried to hold on to his office even after he lost the election. An American president incited an angry mob to attack the U.S. Capitol. Donald Trump is gone, but the simple truth is, it may just be for now.
And then at 10, there was a pro-rioting hour. W. Kamau Bell and his show, United Shades of America.
Portland seems like a special snowflake off in the Pacific Northwest, but also it is clear that the problems that Portland, Oregon is experiencing are fundamental to the problems that America is experiencing.
I recently conducted a little Twitter poll as to which CNN show title was more ludicrous, Reliable Sources or United Shades of America. Kamau Bell is not a uniter, but people were like, who's Kamau Bell? Never heard of that show. Well, it's on Sunday nights at 10 in chunks. You know, it's sort of a special. It's a rolling special. It'll be on for 2 or 3 months and then it vanishes for a while. The title of this episode was Power of Protest. Could have called it Power of BLM and Antifa Rioting. The caption describing the show said, returning to Portland to explore the emerging dynamics of the current protests, talking with the founders of BLM as well as athletes, entertainers, and regular folks who've become active in the social and economic justice movement. He had a fawning, laughing interview with two members of Antifa. And this is not the first time he's done that. That's what returning to Portland means. 2 years ago, in May of 2019, Kamau Bell playfully interviewed one of these Antifa people, a self-proclaimed anarcho-communist. She was pulling out of her purse, showing him her pink brass knuckles and a large pocket knife. Bell did not disapprove. So looting, rioting, violence, it depends on, well, if you're a Trumper, that's bad. But if you're anti-fascist, if you're about racial justice, well, we understand you might want to mix it up with the cops. A month ago, we pointed out CNN's reporters wouldn't condemn leftists throwing water bottles at their heads. Miguel Marquez said, I cannot blame them for being angry. Well, what if they sent him to the hospital? It's just mind-boggling to me. A year ago, protesters in Atlanta vandalized CNN headquarters and broke a bunch of windows. They were throwing smoke bombs. They were throwing objects at the police. There did not seem to be everlasting outrage over that at CNN. And this is sort of the problem. We can all say the January 6th riot was terrible and it shouldn't have happened. But CNN has a very divergent standard on rioting. It should be easy for any of us, and especially a news media who you would think would say we can all stand for peaceful protest, civil disagreement. We can all be against rioting, no matter who the rioter is. But the standard at CNN seems to be, if you love Trump, your rioting is horrible, and it can be compared to September 11. Why would you have a January 6th commission rather than congressional hearings? Congressional hearings are already doing this job. You have an independent bipartisan commission on January 6th because you're trying to say that this is somehow like September 11. It's really not comparable to September 11 in any way. And you can dislike the jerks and the nuts and the kooks who came with their bear spray on January 6th. They didn't hijack an airplane and drive it into the World Trade Center. So CNN should get its head straight. We should all be able to agree. Rioting is bad. Looting is bad. Violence is bad. And it doesn't matter whether you're a right winger or a left winger. Wouldn't it be nice if we could at least agree on that? We'll have more with Curtis Houck after this.
MRC-store.com.
Pro-gun, pro-life, pro-God, and pro-America? Welcome to the Pro Shop.
MRC-store.com.
T-shirts, hoodies, goodies, and much more.
MRC-store.com.
The only store that always offers conservatives more.
That's MRC-store.com.
Log on, log in, and help the Media Research Center while shopping for great gear today.
MRC-store.com.
We are back on the Newsbusters podcast with Curtis Houck. You have to get to his Twitter if you don't have it, at Curtis Houck, H-O-U-C-K, because he's constantly tweeting video. If you want to see what's going on in real time, lots of people have done it. You got to keep on top of it. And of course, last night, I mean, how many tweets did you have to make about Joy Reid's show last night?
It was one of those things where start to finish, the show was a disaster. You know, it's one of those things where as soon as the show starts, she starts by wearing a sweater that looks like the Palestinian flag here. That was one of the things
that was unintentional.
Oh yeah, that might have been unintentional.
It certainly was not a good looking sweater.
Yeah, it was kind of
green and red and gray. It's gray, not white. The flag is red, white, and green.
Maybe
she did it's pro Italy.
Oh, who knows? I don't know. Maybe. But no, so that was, you know, what I saw at the start, and I'm like, oh boy. Oh, geez. This show's going to be ridiculous. And I hadn't checked the guest list, though I should have on Twitter beforehand. And sure enough, we started with a segment about this January 6th commission that Democrats are trying to make into their Pied Piper. And the most hilarious part of all of this, there was a serious part, but the funny part about this was Joy Reid, Jason Johnson, and David Jolly, who claims he's just an independent when he's actually a Democrat. He's basically a wannabe Charlie Crist here, which is not exactly a compliment that you want to be looking at here. Thankful I'm not Scott Whitlock, because he would have a lot more to say about that.
Yes.
But they insist that this will be a seminal issue in the 2022 midterms. Jason Johnson said,
every single Democrat needs to nationalize this election as soon as possible. The Democrats, 2022 is theirs to lose. All they have to do is keep the economy functioning, which they may or may not be able to control, make this a national election, and pass voting rights reform.
Okay, I just have to break in and say, just as a citizen, maybe not as a media critic, we are 3 months into this term. Could we stop predicting what the dominant issue is going to be in November of 22. That just bothers me no matter what we're talking about. But it does show you, as you're, I'm sure you're suggesting or did suggest to Newsbusters, they want to have a bipartisan commission, and then at the same time saying this issue is going to help them win.
Right. That's definitely a tell here. And it's really unhelpful here. And, well, you think back to 2019, during those first couple Democratic debates, do we honestly think COVID was going to be an issue? Now, granted, we're not going to have a huge issue like a pandemic front and center during a presidential election or a midterm election. But even something to that, you know, you take it down a few notches, terrorism, you know, mass shootings, jobs, inflation. You really can pick any issue right now. Inflation could get worse between now and then. It could get better, but we don't know that right now. So for these people to go around and say that this will be the seminal issue and that, you know, this proves that the 2022 election is for Democrats to lose is just simply ludicrous here. And it shows their lack of seriousness here. If they were actually concerned about what happened that day, the horrible events of what happened that day, they would be displaying a level of sobriety. And no, they're almost gleeful about this. They're spending minutes after minutes after minutes wondering about how painful it is for Americans to have to relive the events of January 6th. You don't do that if you're having some sort of reverence or if you think about from a law enforcement perspective and investigating a crime or an event that took place. You don't have 20-minute panels on MSNBC, whether it's Joy Reid's show, Nicole Wallace's show, Rachel Maddow going on a monologue. You don't do those sorts of things if you actually think it's serious. But instead, what this shows is that it is a partisan aim that these people have here. And it's so much so that David Jolly pointed out,
what happened on January 6th was an attempt to undermine our democracy, to rip away our election, to undo our republic. That is not similar to the other protests that we have seen, to the other violence we have seen. That is not similar, as Kevin McCarthy suggested, to the violence on the baseball field where the shooting occurred of Republican members of Congress.
I believe Jolly was in Congress at that point.
I would say so.
Yeah. And so
he's saying that the riot on January 6th was a bigger deal.
Right.
Than shooting members of Congress.
Yes, nearly a dozen members of the House and Senate Republican Party were mowed down.
I can't even grasp what he's trying to say there.
Right.
Although I will say, I think we remember this, that the Scalise shooter was a fan of Rachel Maddow.
Right. And this is the point that I frequently make where I run really hot on Twitter, which is when you throw off rhetoric like this on MSNBC or CNN, it's dangerous stuff. There are people listening here that are really gaslit into having these deranged views about the other party, where you really almost otherize. They like to talk about the right demonizing the other, whether they talk about immigrants or particularly Hispanics or Muslims. Mm-hmm. But this is what they do on their networks. They otherwise, which is at least 74 million people on the right. These are your neighbors and colleagues and people you go to church or synagogue or mosque with, people that you see in the grocery store.
And you're saying they basically suggested that 74 million Trump voters were all pro-riot. Is that
right? Exactly. And that's kind of the bigger issue that we see here. And it's just dangerous rhetoric. And speaking of dangerous rhetoric, I just want to note here real quick, in the next block, Joy Reid said that, you know, the body camera footage of the Andrew Brown shooting in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, reminded her of the 2003 invasion of Iraq.
Up next on the readout, like a scene out of the Battle of Baghdad, North Carolina deputies, armed to the teeth, shot and killed Andrew Brown Jr. in a drugs arrest. Police claim the deputies were attempting to serve search warrants and arrest warrants related to drug charges. Armed like a military unit, invading 2003 Baghdad, no less.
Which is kind of ridiculous. And of course, she admitted the fact that the reason that police were armed to the teeth there was because this guy had, in addition to a lengthy criminal record, as part of that was a lengthy history of violently resisting arrest. So that's kind of what they were worried about here.
I'm sorry. I mean, we went into Baghdad with jets, with fighter jets, with tanks. I mean, did anybody see fighter jets in over Elizabeth City, North Carolina? I mean, this is the kind of thing where it's like, if you had independent fact checkers, they'd be like, what on earth is she talking about? This is, how can you even joke that this is like Baghdad in 2003?
Again, it's gaslighting and dangerous, and it helps no one. You know, if we're in, even in this 21st century, you know, move on here. Drones, yeah. Did they use a drone to shoot him once he tried to drive away in his BMW? No, that's not what they were doing here. And of course, she had Benjamin Crump on, who said,
what they looked like was a lynch mob with guns and badges coming to hunt a black man.
And he goes on to say, well, what's the worst that could have happened? He would have gotten away, and then they would have had to, quote, regroup and try and get him. You know, I think that kind of defeats the purpose of, like, law enforcement, where it's just like, oh, man, we showed up and knocked at his house and he ran out the back. Oh, darn it. We'll get him next time. Well, that's not how this works.
I think that this is where Benjamin Crump looks like the new Al Sharpton. I mean, he's coming in to unload all of these nasty metaphors about how somebody's being hunted. A black man's being hunted. They're not there to get him because he's a black man. They're coming to get him because he's a criminal, a violent criminal.
Right, exactly. And I frequently said on Twitter that Benjamin Crump and Al Sharpton, these people profit when Americans of different political ideologies and specifically skin colors are at each other's throats. If we all got along and there was actual unity, like MLK talked about on 828, these people would be out of jobs. So, but moving on to the big topic here, Maricopa County, Arizona recorder Stephen Richard joined Joy Reid last night. And as I believe it was Bonchi at Red State, our good friend, was wondering what it's like when a guest goes on Joy Reid's show and tells her something that she doesn't want to hear. We learned what that looks like when to talk about the audit here, which, you know, at the very least seems kind of dubious. There's a lot of legalese and statements back and forth, and there's cameras and talk about highlighters and bamboo, and I mean it's kind of a mess right now. No matter what you think about it, even if you're for it, it's been kind of a mess. So he goes on here and starts out by telling Joy Reid exactly what she wants to hear: that Republicans are dangerous, they're undermining democracy. But then when Joy asks,
worried that this then becomes the standard way that your party behaves when they lose elections.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it opens the door to both parties. I don't think this is now specific to just one party.
Well,
Democrats don't believe in this, though. Democrats, do you ever have any record of Democrats ever doing this? The pain in the loss of the 2000 election was real. But Al Gore himself presided over handing over the election to George W. Bush. Hillary Clinton losing to that reality show guy who everyone knew was unqualified to be president. Everyone knew that. They handed over. You had President Obama. You had Hillary Clinton, who knew they were handing the country over to a madman. They did it. You cannot name where Democrats actually believe in democracy when they lose. Your party doesn't seem to, sir.
So in my piece at Newsbusters, which I encourage everyone to read, I have a whole bunch of links about things from 2000 and 2004 specifically, because I think 2004 is one that people forget about.
Yes.
The Democrats were going around saying the results in Ohio in particular were so unbelievable, contrary to what they thought going in, that the machines had to have been rigged. The late Christopher Hitchens wrote 2 years later in Vanity Fair that Ohio's voting machines had to be inspected because there's no way that John Kerry lost the election.
I'll say this. This is the one place where Joy, you can grant Joy or stipulate one point, which was, yes, these people in 2000 very angrily resisted the result. I mean, the Pacifica Radio called Bush the president-select. Maxine Waters just didn't seem to stop objecting to Bush's election. But there was no riot during the counting of the Electoral College. Okay,
correct.
There was no riot at the Capitol in 2016. And so, okay, but this is how imprecise what she's talking about. Because, yes, we all remember that the Democrats do have trouble accepting election results. It's just that I suppose what you had, we were all pulling this footage out of Jamin Raskin or whoever in 2016 objecting while the Electoral College certification was going on, they would say, oh, well, that was, they're basically suggesting that was theater for their base.
They didn't have a senator to also object to, so it was a bunch of House members, and then that was it.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was a, they're basically saying, well, our protests were pointless on purpose.
Right, and yeah, that kind of gives away the game. And also, we're not really trying to do both sides here. We're taking each election as it goes here and trying to create a cohesive picture here and say that, yes, questioning the results is, yeah, kind of undermining our democracy here. But I think for Democrats to say that they accept election results is just an absolute farce.
Well, she, and again, she's right that Al Gore conceded after, like, 35 days. But it took quite a while. And frankly, we fully expected that Donald Trump was going to concede. And that was the disappointment. He still hasn't really conceded. Now, Hillary Clinton was running around in 2019 suggesting that the election was still stolen from her.
No surprise. 3 years after the historic election of 2016, she's still grappling with defeat.
I believe he knows he's an illegitimate president. He knows. He knows that there were a bunch of different reasons why the election turned out the way it did. And I take responsibility for those parts of it that I should. But, Jane, it was like applying for a job and getting 66 million letters of recommendation and losing to a corrupt human tornado. And so I know that he knows that this wasn't on the level. I don't know that we'll ever know everything that happened, but clearly we know a lot and are learning more every day, and history will probably sort it all out.
And that's completely acceptable to them because, well, you know, losers, Democrat losers are allowed to complain like this, apparently. But when Trump does it, it's anti-democratic. So you're right. There's an absolute double standard there. But yes, we should also allow that recounts are part of what happens after close elections. I will remind the young people that in 2001, it was the newspapers that went down to Florida and conducted their own recounts and found out, oh, I guess Bush did win Florida. But, you know, the act of recounting itself is, it can be part of the democratic process. It builds confidence in elections to recount. And there was obviously recounting done after this election.
Yeah.
So that confidence in our elections is important. But let's recall, the media spent, 4 years basically suggesting that the Russians imposed their electoral will on America.
Yeah, I believe there were polls actually done asking Democrats if you believe that Russia hacked the voting machines to change the numbers in states like Wisconsin to vote for Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. That is an actual thing that Democrats have believed. Democrats spent 4 years running around saying, and journalists, the liberal media is saying that they Russians hacked, quote unquote, the election. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that mean? What does that imply? That implies that Donald Trump did not actually win that election, that Hillary Clinton was the rightful winner of the election. So then that's really what we're getting at here. And I'll just add, in December 2000, there was a poll done by Gallup that found only 18% of Democrats believe George W. Bush was a legitimate president.
Yeah.
And that's just ridiculous.
You all forget that now.
Exactly. And the Russia investigation in 2016 that precede, you know, the entire Mueller probe and the behavior of the FBI with Andrew McCabe leaking to Devlin Barrett, you know, who's now with the Washington Post, James Comey with his memorandums that he was leaking through his friends now that are now with Lawfare, you know, that entire thing, that doesn't exactly instill confidence in our democracy and that those people actually believe that Donald Trump won in 2016. But speaking of elections here, I just have to add here, that Joy had an absolute worst segment that she always does, which is interesting because
it's Olbermann like.
Yeah, she's copying from Olbermann. Our friend Johnny Dollar noted that to me last night. Mm-hmm. And when you're copying off of Olbermann, that's not a good idea. It's very unoriginal when you're trying to build a show.
We used to have, I believe Bozell was the worst person in the world once with Olbermann. I know I was once a worser. You don't really want to be the one that gets celebrated in such a way. Some people really enjoyed being on Olbermann's, you know, naughty list.
Right, exactly. So Jory actually said that Andrew Giuliani, who's running for governor,
the son of Rudy Giuliani,
is the absolute worst over Andrew Cuomo.
I was in a hospital. I got transferred to a nursing home and my father died. My father was in a nursing home, got transferred to a hospital, and my father died. But who cares? 33, 28, died in a hospital, died in a nursing home. They died.
He's worse. He's the worst. But Andrew Giuliani is the absolute worst.
He's the worst Andrew.
Because Reid's defense was, at least he, quote, wasn't a Republican governor resistant to taking action on the pandemic.
Oh, like Ron DeSantis.
Right, exactly. Ron DeSantis killed everybody in New York and Connecticut and New Jersey, and it's terrible. And Joy Reid said that Cuomo's deadly mistakes were fine because New York, quote, could do worse if they elected Andrew Giuliani. So a guy who had a $5 million book deal was sexually harassing and allegedly inappropriately touching at least 10 different women over his political career. And he had a deadly nursing home policy, all while lying about all of these things and denying all of them and attacking his accusers and critics.
But who cares?
He's not that bad.
Well, Cuomo's done several things over the last couple of weeks where he's had these press conferences, and he sort of suggested that he has nothing to apologize for on the sexual harassment. He has nothing to apologize for taking a $5 million book deal to write a book that not very many people bought, taking credit for doing a great job in COVID, which he absolutely did not do. Now, there's your gaslighting.
Right.
And that's one of those places where you can say, we will look back at the media coverage of 2020 and especially focus in on how the way they covered Andrew Cuomo and say, this is how wrong a Democrat Party press can get the facts.
Right. And this is an issue where narratives are set in.
Yeah.
Narrative was set in that Andrew Cuomo knows what he's doing in the briefings, you know, made people feel good and feel like we're going to get through this. But now we have to engage in actual important revisionist history to explain, well, actually, no, he was lying the whole time. Seniors were dying. But the narrative was set in that he knows what he's doing. So in the minds of a lot of people who, you know, were either ardent Democrats, or, you know, people that really hate Trump, or people that, you know, just aren't able to be involved in politics like us for a living, which is arguably kind of a good thing. They may not remember all these blow-to-blow things that have come back to hit Cuomo in the behind here. His behavior is starting to catch up with him, but the narrative was set in. But yes, Joy Reid, just to put a button on it, she has had quite the week. You know, our Christine Marsh found on Monday, she said the idea that the Supreme Court is taking up a case on late-term abortions in Mississippi, I believe, is, quote, straight out of Handmaid's Tale. The very idea that the court is taking a case is not something that should be allowed here.
Conservative-led Supreme Court has agreed to take up Mississippi's restrictive abortion law, and women's reproductive rights appear to be in serious, serious danger. It's straight out of The Handmaid's Tale, with a Gilead-style government right here in America.
I mean, that's just absolutely ludicrous here. Does she remember, like, the Casey decision? Really, any abortion case? I believe there was one out of Louisiana that Roberts went with. There have been a number of abortion cases since then where it's gone their way. But the idea of actually taking a case is beyond the pale.
Well, I think that it shows their fear. But, The Handmaid's Tale, the whole fascinating thing about The Handmaid's Tale, and what a nice transition this will be, the whole idea that the news media would run around and look at this completely unrealistic, kooky, left-wing fantasy land about how America was going to be some sort of patriarchal white Christian nightmare and say, oh, this seems so relevant. This seems so much like what the America we're living in, which is absolutely ludicrous, where there's the independent fact checkers again don't come out and say, no, sorry, this is not a white patriarchal national state where you can't get an abortion. This is crazy town. But I think that this takes us to Anne Hornaday, the Washington Post movie critic, who we've written about a lot over the years. I mean, a movie critic is paid to be opinionated, but she's a very political critic. You know, there's not a movie that's been made about the Obamas glorifying the Obamas that she didn't adore. You know, documentaries glorifying Elizabeth Warren, she absolutely loves. Anything panicking about climate change, she's all for it. And now she's taking after someone who's not exactly our favorite, Congressman Marjorie Taylor Greene. What is she comparing this to?
She's saying that this is a real life reincarnation, 21st century version of Birth of a Nation,
which is a movie about the Klan,
which was played at the Woodrow Wilson White House, I believe. And he hailed it as a fantastical movie.
Oh, stop it, Glenn Beck.
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
Stop telling us about how Woodrow Wilson, the Democrat, was such a disgusting racist.
Oh, yeah. Well, and what's so funny is, yeah, she says the headline online is "A New Era of Incivility in Congress Brings the Birth of a Nation Full Circle." I mean, this is just absolutely ludicrous. What I was saying here, which I realized last night, which is she's comparing the Republican Party and its voters to the KKK here. And specifically, she talks about how Newt Gingrich precipitated this downfall, mm-hmm. which is something that I was not really around for. I was busy watching Digimon.
Save the digital world.
And Power Rangers.
It's morphin' time!
But Mr. Graham was here for this.
And I was 30. But the
with Newt Gingrich being the cause and downfall of America, creating this cage match politics and turning opponents into enemies, never missing a chance to otherize Democrats as sick, radical, and un-American. And she also blamed C-SPAN as well here, which is really interesting here. The bigger point here, and then I'll stop, is I think everything she's describing in here about Newt Gingrich and the Republican Party is exactly what the news media themselves are guilty of doing here.
Yeah.
And you don't even have to like Marjorie Taylor Greene. And actually, I've been very vocal about it.
Yeah.
I could do without her. I could also do without the squad. Can we just get rid of all of them? And that's fine. But the idea that these people are equivalent to the KKK and Birth of a Nation and they are the problem that's keeping America from being a good country is just ludicrous.
Yeah, I think that the interesting thing about this, from somebody who was there at the time, this sounds almost exactly like what Fareed Zakaria was saying on Sunday night at CNN, and that is that the Republican Party's gone down this rat hole under Newt Gingrich because Newt Gingrich actually said, this is what they don't like. They're used to the George H.W. Bushes, who came to his inaugural speech and said, we didn't come here to bicker. And then he lost in 92 because he didn't come here to bicker. And Newt Gingrich had a different approach. Newt Gingrich was basically saying, the Democrats are ruining this country. You're not allowed to say that. How dare you say the Democrats, and the welfare state and anything that you wanted, they're weak on defense, whatever the conservative case was against the Democrats. He was so uncivil. Well, because he walked out of raising taxes in 1990 with George H.W. Bush. How dare you? But the reality of all of this is, as you suggest, the central point, and you made it, which is, yes, politics is nasty right now. And we have these freshmen or now sophomore members of Congress who come to Congress to perform. And the squad was glorified by the left. The Ilhan Omars, it didn't matter how kooky and nutty and anti-Semitic Ilhan Omar was, she was a star. Now, I would say this, you'd have to agree with me. Marjorie Taylor Greene's not on the cover of National Review. She's not being celebrated by the conservative media that I'm a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the glorified way, the Mount Rushmore of woke that we got from the left 2 years ago. But, this would be my problem with the Matt Gaetzes of the world. It was my problem with Joe Walsh before he became a Democrat. You know, being a freshman member of Congress used to be that you came and you learned, and you were fairly quiet because you were a new member of Congress, and that was what was expected. Well, today that's not the way people get elected, and they're all about their Twitter account,
right.
Or their Instagram, or making appearances on cable news.
We had Madison Cawthorn saying that in a Time magazine article that he hired a staff of communicators. He didn't hire anybody to legislate.
That's the problem.
And exactly. And then you say things that are factually untrue, like, we passed my resolution. I'm the first freshman member of Congress to get something passed in Congress, and it's just factually not true.
Yeah.
I believe one, maybe two others went well before him, and he was just a co-sponsor of this bill. But I would also say that Newt Gingrich, in addition to saying that the Democrats and the Clintons and everyone else were destroying America and really not looking to go along to get along, and they were just looking to steamroll the rest of the country, Newt was actually proposing policies. You know, I don't think, regardless of whether you agreed or disagreed with Newt Gingrich, you have to admit that he was about ideas. And yeah. I think that's one of the things that we as conservatives, when you look at somebody like his career from a big picture, 10,000 foot view, which is the guy is a person of ideas. He's always been that way. So to say that he was just empty gestures and empty rhetoric and platitudes and rants on cable news is just absolutely ludicrous what's going on here. He understood that what Ann Hornaday is doing in here, which is trying to bulldoze any and all political opposition. Margaret Sullivan does this multiple times a week, literally yeah. every single column, where she's trying to bulldoze opposition to her.
Well, this is why they say the paper is all about democracy dying in darkness. And yeah, I think sometimes it really does come across that they're upset that Republicans... maybe they're not upset that Republicans exist. It's just that they really expect Republicans to all behave like these very obedient Me Too Republicans.
Right.
This is what Republicans didn't like even back in the 70s. They got the feeling that Nixon and then the other Republicans in the 70s and the 80s up to Gingrich, they even complained about this under Bob Michael in the Reagan years, and that is, yeah, there's too much get-along, go-along. There's too much what we would call the Me Too Republicans. And, yes, that is not a problem we've had as much of a problem with now. That's what the Zacarias and the Hornadays are complaining about, is that you have Republicans who actually dare to oppose, and they don't like it. They really shouldn't be allowed to oppose. That's why they don't really like fake news is what they think Fox News is, because, well, everybody can see that's just like partisan propaganda. Oh, and what is CNN?
Right.
What is MSNBC?
Well, that's what Oliver Darcy was doing today, calling out the New York Times for daring to run ads from Fox News. That Fox News should not be allowed to advertise. And this is just the censorship that we're living in, because people are starting to see this for what they are. They're seeing them that they're not really about debate or free exchange of ideas. If they were, you know, these big outlets would still have people like Barry Weiss and Glenn Greenwald.
Yeah.
You know, one of the few people I would say that are left there on the left in that kind of world would probably be something maybe like Elizabeth Bruning, for what she, you know, we saw what happened to her for saying that she loves being a mother young. Mm-hmm. Her fellow leftists tore her apart. I would also put Chuck Lane in there probably. You know, he's a lot of his columns are fairly respectful and fairly interesting. But yeah, otherwise, people are seeing it for what it is. And so they're calling them out. And even they're just saying, hey, something's wrong here. This is kind of ridiculous. And these people have such a massive overreaction to this that they, you know, the Jim Acostas of the world has really made this their go-to, which is they equate media criticism to death threats. And that's obviously not what we're doing here. We condemned when CNN had bombs sent to them. And that's really what we're trying to get out of here. And, you know, help uncoursing our politics, for lack of a better term, because we saw what happened to CNN and we saw what happened to congressional Republicans in Alexandria.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have Ann Hornaday running around here and just going off with the most evil and of evil terms. Republicans are the enemy, but I'm not actually going to say it without actually using the word enemy. But we were told enemy of the people was a bad term. So it. The media have decided to do is do everything but use that word when talking about their opponents.
Well, I mean, just again, the whole motto democracy dies in darkness basically implies that all the Republicans who voted for Trump are for democracy dying in darkness. I mean, the entire slogan itself is gaslighting and partisanship. So if you want to skip over the Washington Post and just see our analysis of the Washington Post, you can come to Newsbusters once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.